You know, it wasn't long ago that interfaith marriage was relatively rare. And if religion played a role in family life, children likely would be raised in the tradition of one parent or the other. While that comes with its own built-in challenges, an alternative scenario is emerging which see kids growing up as both. Susan Katz Miller was raised Jewish in an interfaith family and today is raising a family with her Christian husband. But her children are described well by the title of Susan's brand new book, Being Both, Embracing Two Religions in One Interfaith Family. And I'm very happy that the publication of this book brings Susan Katz Miller to State of Belief Radio. Susan, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
A good way for us to begin. A quick background of your own interfaith upbringing and now how that informed the decisions that you've made with your family and with your children.
My mother decided that she would agree to have us be Jewish. And so she put aside her Christianity. She learned to make matzah balls. She studied Hebrew so that she could follow along with us in synagogue. And she shepherded all four of her children through the rigorous bar and bat mitzvah preparation. So she became a great, what's now called all but conversion, mother of a Jewish family. Sometimes she refers to herself as a common law Jew. But as an adult, when I had to decide with my husband how to raise our children, I really couldn't imagine doing what she did, which was to give up my own religion, in my case, Judaism. I'm a feminist, and my mother put aside her career and stayed home to raise four kids. She also capitulated on this question of religion. And for me, it's hard to imagine doing that. Part of what I write about in the book is that any pathway you choose, whether it's one or the other or both or neither, each of these pathways is going to have really distinct benefits, but also distinct challenges. Mm-hmm. And one of the challenges I faced when my parents gave me this label of Jewish was that I've had to defend that identity throughout my lifetime. Mm. And this is partly, as you probably know, from an Orthodox or a conservative perspective, I'm not considered Jewish because it's patrilineal. Mm-hmm. So I've had to defend my Jewish identity. And this also led me to realize that kids born into interfaith families are going to have to defend their identities no matter what that identity is. Mm-hmm. They're always going to have that interfaithness. And so that's part of why my husband and I decided to do both. The choice of both had distinct benefits. And part of that is that I have been out in the world. I've lived in Muslim countries. I've lived in Catholic countries. And I wanted my children to be global citizens and to be literate in both of their ancestral religions. Mm-hmm. To understand references to both testaments in literature. And I really see a lot of parallels with a couple who speak two different languages and want their child to be bilingual. Mm-hmm. Because growing up, I was really very ignorant of Christianity. And I think in American culture, it's very helpful to understand Christianity. In fact, there are Jewish scholars such as Amy Jill Levine, mm-hmm. who are very Jewish, but who are advocating for all Jewish children to have better education in Christianity. Mm-hmm. But certainly those who have an interfaith extended family, it's very important to me that my kids get both of those sets of texts and rituals and the knowledge and the histories. Mm-hmm. All of that is important to us.
How has it been living in a family practicing two different religions?
The biggest drawback that families talk about is the necessity of having to explain yourself all the time. Mm-hmm. People don't understand it. They're sometimes really challenged by it and bothered by it. But again, as an interfaith child, you're going to have to defend your identity no matter what it is. So what we find really helpful is that we have formed these communities in the major cities, in Washington, in New York, in Chicago. There are communities that have formed Sunday schools, religious education programs for these children, where they learn both religions side by side. And that also really helps kids with their sense of self-esteem and the sense that they're doing something that is not marginal or different.
Mm-hmm. If I ask your children separately, what's your religion? What would they say?
Well, they're still teenagers, and I always caution that, you know, none of us end up a single thing. Uh-huh. All of us are continuing to shift and change, and, you know, these Pew Research studies have shown the tremendous fluidity and flexibility of religion in America, and that's even for people who grow up with a single religion. Interfaith kids perhaps are going to be even more likely to shift throughout their lifetimes. My kids are still teens. Both of them still claim both religions. Mm-hmm. They're also both very interested in Buddhism. Mm. And what I did for this book was, rather than just writing about my own family, I surveyed parents and teens and young adults who grew up in these interfaith programs. And what I was seeing is that the young people who went through these interfaith education programs often feel strongly that they want to keep both, mm-hmm. and that they don't feel that that's immature, that they feel like they get benefits from both. Some of them do choose a single religion. Mm-hmm. So there has been concern that if you raise them with both, they'll never choose.
Yeah.
And I don't see that either. I do see young people choosing.
You found something in researching for this book that I think will surprise our listeners. You say almost a third of married Americans have a spouse with a different religious background.
There are a lot of different statistics, by the way, and it depends on how you define interfaith. If you include Protestant, Catholic, or evangelical Protestant, mainline Protestant as interfaith, then that percentage gets much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of discussion about what the true number is. But it's definitely a very significant percentage of Americans at this point.
Yeah.
And the interfaith marriage rates of other religious minorities beyond Judaism has been growing for Muslims, for Hindus, for Buddhists, all of these.
Where I grew up and when I grew up, interfaith was Presbyterians and Baptists. But you're right. The world has changed in many ways. I would assume that celebrating both Judaism and Christianity would be good for holidays, because the holidays have somewhat compatible themes and that kind of thing. What was the biggest challenge between distinguishing the two religions within the home?
One of the biggest challenges is burnout, because if you try to celebrate the full set of two holidays, it's almost like you're in a continuous holiday mode.
Yeah.
And it gets exhausting, and you do have to pick and choose, but every family picks mm-hmm. and chooses.
Mm-hmm.
And every religion has a process of curating, you know, which rituals are going to be considered obsolete and which are going to be the most compelling and which are the most important to preserve. That process goes on continuously. In my family, I think certainly my children enjoyed all of the holidays. Our family tries hard to go beyond the obvious of Hanukkah and Christmas, mm-hmm. Easter and Passover. I'm very aware that families who do both are sometimes accused of doing nothing, and we are trying to be sort of maximalists rather than minimalists. And so we do not just Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah in the fall, but Sukkot and Simchat Torah, but we also celebrated the blessing of the animals in mm-hmm. honor of St. Francis.
Mm-hmm.
My kids have a great-great-grandfather who was a circuit-riding rabbi in the 19th century in Mississippi and Louisiana, mm-hmm. serving small Jewish communities on the river. I want my children to grow up knowing that story and understanding what it means to be a rabbi.
Mm-hmm.
They also have a great-great-grandfather who was an Episcopal bishop of Newark.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine raising them in a way such that they don't understand what it means to be an Episcopalian and to mm-hmm. be a bishop and the yeah. significance of that ancestor.
When you and your husband got married, you brought in not just yourselves, but your parents and the extended families of different traditions. How did the extended family accept your decision?
We were very lucky. We had a very long courtship, and by the time we got married, I think our families were just happy we were getting married. And that pattern repeated the pattern for my own parents who intermarried. And they also, because of their long courtship, because they got married relatively late in life, their families were really just happy that they were getting married. But I know it's not that easy for every family. I mean, there are still families where this is a real challenge.
Where do interfaith families find support and someone to help them understand how to relate to the community, all the questions that come up that are not givens in people's lives? They need someone to help them.
Traditionally, there have been a number of places that interfaith families have turned to for that kind of community, religious community. A lot of them have been welcomed in the Unitarian Universalist congregations. Mm-hmm. Some of them choose secular humanism or ethical society. But more and more, there are progressive Jewish communities and progressive Christian Protestant communities and Catholic that are welcoming these families.
Right.
So I think that that support is really crucial. And it's important for children to have community and for spouses to have community. And if you can't find one of those communities that's welcoming in your geographic area, I would encourage you, if you're open to the idea of doing both, to start an interfaith families support group.
Mm-hmm.
The group that my family belongs to in Washington has over 100 children in the interfaith Sunday school. And the groups in Chicago and New York are similar in being very large, thriving organizations. But all you really need is, say, four other interfaith families who want to get together for Shabbat once a month or to celebrate holidays. And you can have that kind of support and compare notes. And then if you want to, go on and form a sort of one-room schoolhouse and start an interfaith education program.
Yeah. Susan, is there something in this book that you really wanted to talk about that I haven't asked you and given you a chance to talk about?
One point I wanted to bring up, and this is perhaps more subtle, is that there's a lot of interfaith activism and interfaith dialogue going on, especially since 9/11. And this is great. It's very important for our world. And these are events and conversations that you often take one Christian, one Jew, one Hindu, one Muslim, and have them engage in conversation or do community service together. That's all great. But there's been a sort of an invisible wall between that conversation and the interfaith families conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes interfaith families are seen as threatening because they are bridging these barriers that we're trying to put up. And the ambiguity is hard sometimes for religious institutions to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
I'm making the argument in this book that people from interfaith families, whether they're intermarried or they're interfaith children, actually have tremendous skills in building those bridges. They live day and night, 24/7, in these interfaith conversations, and they have a lot to contribute to interfaith peacemaking. And
mm-hmm.
I would like to see some of these young interfaith adults coming up be part of that interfaith conversation.
That's a great point.
Talking to these children in particular is very exciting because they are so articulate about their place as ambassadors, people who can sit with a friend who's Jewish, a friend who's Christian, a friend who's Muslim, and help that group to function. They have those skills of cross-cultural, cross-faith communication.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping that's what I would find, and I did find it. And
Good.
The book is filled with the stories of these children, of these couples, and
Good.
All of those examples are, of course, very encouraging to me.
Susan Katzmiller is the author of Being Both, Embracing Two Religions in One Interfaith Family. The book's just been published by Beacon Press. Susan is a former Newsweek reporter. She writes frequently at the Huffington Post and elsewhere. Thank you for coming in and being a part of State of Belief Radio.
Thank you.